Hello, I'm Rob Hirschfeld, CEO and co-founder of Rakuten and your host for the Cloud 2030 podcast. In this episode, we dive into a talk that I've been building and working on called the compliance death curve, something that is an evolving concept that tries to explain how companies fight compliance, governance, standardization efforts, something critical to platform team and infrastructure platform team operations. In this case, we went back to that conversation to try to decompose some of the mathematics that I'd been using into more universal or more easily understood components, which is exactly what we did. In the process, we built a compliance flywheel that I found really fascinating. And something that if you look in the graphics for this podcast, you will see an example of that work. This is one that even if you don't have the screen in front of you, I think we did a good enough job talking through the concepts that you will find it to be very useful. And if you want to, it will also be helpful to check out my compliance death curve talk. At least one has been recorded and released. And I will continue refining this talk and giving it at conferences, I hope like GlueCon or some other vendor items as we go through the summer and fall. So check that out. It's a really good conversation and I know you will enjoy it. Y'all ready for some math? I would love to get pick up on the compliance death curve. And see if y'all had insights into how we would go do that. It's different. Okay. Let's go. Here we go. I haven't put a lot of thought in. Let me review where we were, because y'all had a ton of ideas, and we'll bring back where we were. So I went through very, very briefly a couple of weeks ago this idea of the compliance death curve, where standard is sort of standardization and agility, where people are they're so worried about the bottom of this curve, they don't get into the innovation phase of the curve. And we don't need to rehash the really good conversation we had about why this is happening. What we ended up doing, this is in the middle of another deck, sorry, was I tried to recreate some of this as a mathematical formula, because I think it's helpful, especially when you're talking to business people, to sort of put it into some simple mathematic trade-off type of conversations. And so I got into this agility is autonomy times standardization. That's this one. And then I broke standardization. Yeah. But what was tripping y'all up was this sort of these, and these are misconception ideas to me. They're not correct, but it's useful, is that, what we see when people talk about, they assume that any increase in compliance comes at the expense of agility. And so I was trying to capture that in this sort of idea that agility and standardization are counter to each other. And the only, you know, and because I think a lot of people are afraid that, you know, if they're going to get better compliance, they're going to lose agility to do it. And then the next one I think that y'all found more frustrating was the idea that autonomy is the primary driver and standardization is the primary detractor from agility. So as I drive up standardization, I'm going to get less agility. And that's not true. But I believe this is, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, Rob. Can you go back to the previous one?
This one? Or no, this one?
No. Yeah. Wouldn't that be, okay, maybe it's my dyslexia, but wouldn't agility be on the top and standardization be on the bottom?
No. And because if agility increases in your organization, this is the myth, by the way.
Okay.
The perception is that if I'm highly agile, that it's I can't be compliant.
Yeah, in the context of the myth, the position is correct. Again, in the context of the myth.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you going myth reality, or are you doing a bunch of myths
I have two
and
myths.
talk about
I have two
reality?
myths. The other myth is that standardization and autonomy are opposed.
The one thing I have a problem with, if you
Yeah.
put these back to back, I would be better if we could see them side to side, but
Can do that. And as far as the slides go, that's not what I meant to do.
but again, like on the one hand side, you have agility, standardization divided by agility, but then if you on the later one, if you move standardization to the left of the equation equal sign, then it would be agility times standardization. So it's
Oh, so you're actually, yeah, that's a if you substituted
yeah.
in agility, I wonder how easily I can write on this. Probably pretty easily. Yeah, so if I substitute agility in here, then what I end up with is oh, that's interesting. Hold on. Let me actually do that. Or now I have to figure out how to undo the annotating. Oh, there's my
Press the
annotations.
undo.
There's undo. Okay. But what we're saying here is that if you put all these together, sorry, and do the substitution, then you've got a compliance equals standardization squared. Oops, I picked up the wrong thing. Divided by autonomy, right?
Why is it squared?
Because what Madrop is doing is he's substituting agility with autonomy divided by standardization. So.
Correct. Yeah. Didn't work at all. All right.
Not, not, of course, like these are two separate myths. So I don't know if it's even valid to put them together, but yeah.
Yeah, so
Perhaps
it's an
compliance
interesting
divided by
interesting idea to see. Yeah, there are two myths. You're right, they're myths. But it's an interesting point to do that to because then what people because we're going back to fears, and so people's fear is that in order to get compliance, that you're going to have to double down on standardization and crush autonomy. Right.
Or if you move autonomy to the left, then compliance times autonomy equals standardization squared.
Me see what that looks like.
So you guys feel like me, throwing a wrench in the works here?
Hold on a
No,
second. I
Rob,
do.
I don't mean swapping them. I just multiply both sides by compliance.
Oh. Let me see what you're. Okay, so you're
Or
saying.
multiply both sides by autonomy in this case.
Oh, okay, so it's equals. Okay, and then you. Well, that's okay.
Again, like this is probably completely nonsensical, but it can be fun to throw those around and see where the myths can lead the train of
The
thought.
reason why I'm more reluctant to do this is that you're this is I think this is a harder concept for people to understand than the idea that autonomy is you have to suppress autonomy to increase compliance.
Yes.
Again, which is why I said, like it probably doesn't make much sense in terms of the actual math and it's far divorced from reality, but it can be a way of showing the absurdness of the myths.
I think you're right. Although I think if you talk to most people, right, then they would tell you that we can't get in compliance without the standard police coming in and taking away all of our autonomy and destroying innovation from that perspective, right? That's I think because I think the storytelling of saying here's a myth, and if you combine these two myths, what you end up with is people's terror that they're basically gonna they're gonna have to have a doubling of standardization in order to accomplish compliance, and that's what some standardization people are usually okay with. This is what they're really afraid of.
I strongly suspect that the misconception is what they think autonomy means. And this has the risk of becoming political. But if you take the libertarian view of autonomy is I do whatever I want whenever I want, then the myth is true. But if autonomy is I have the freedom to do what I need to do or what I want to do within the scope that I'm given, then this math breaks down.
Yeah. And the other point, Rob, to your storytelling notion, just from a structure perspective and call it experience, is don't put two myths back to back. Put a myth, put reality, put another myth, then put reality. And then if you want to combine the two, because otherwise you're leaving people going, I don't get this at all.
I would second that as well.
Good suggestion.
Of course, the other risk also of putting the myths back to back is that people will start combining the myths like we just did.
And end up with the ridiculous list.
I wanted to talk about standardization.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I think we normally we don't want to get into semantics, but this group often does because actually it turns out to be important. What I want to do is draw a semantic distinction between standardization and modularity. When people think standardization, they're thinking about guardrails and limitation of process to use existing process components, whereas modularity is providing a whole bunch of interchangeable, reusable modules that enable the outcome, right? So it's kind of like the when you think of governance and you think of control, you think standardization as limiting, but modularity is kind of the positive spin on that, that the greater your modularity, the greater the agility, right?
You get replaceable parts like if you want to to draw equivalencies, my choice of angle for this would be what happened in the late 19th century with the standardization of firearm formats.
What do you mean?
The bullet caliber on.
Oh, okay. This is you're going way back. All right. Sorry. I was thinking. Yes.
We can look at the metric system or PVC pipes or those are
screw types. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, but this is where I went with where you were talking about guardrails versus reusability.
Yes.
Right. And then what was interesting is then I went a step further than that. And this is safety. And this is toil.
Okay. Yep.
So the narrative here is different in that we're saying we're going to put in, if people's perception is standardization means more guardrails, we're putting in guardrails for safety, which is protection, which is fundamentally feels like a limitation, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I can go further. Wait, this is a limit.
I would perhaps replace that with risk reduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Better business language. I like safety because it's a more of an emotional word, but yeah.
And this one is acceleration.
Yeah, I can give you an early example of this from my career, that when I was working at HP in the Superdome chipset group, one of the things that I did to create the test automation was to create the ability to automatically extract from the code base the configurations of different multiplexers within the chipset. And the way that I did that was I created an event data structure type that could be called by the engineers in the chipset code base that would help them test their code more effectively. And so that's an example. So I created a module, which was an event hook inside the code, inside the Verilog, the hardware description language code, that these guys could use that actually made their jobs easier. But by doing that, I created all this automation, which resulted in not just acceleration, but also risk reduction. So modularity can lead to standardization without actually reducing agility. It actually can increase agility.
Okay, but I have a little bone to pick here.
Please.
And call it standardization, as in standardizing across a group of things that will always be used, versus standard, as in ISO, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, big difference.
And big difference. And in the reading of this, Rob,
okay,
I would say you're either going to have to speak it or put it on the deck that you're not necessarily that compliance equals subscribing to or following an industry standard, a CompTIA standard, an IEEE standard, a something standard, right? A blessed standard. Standardization is choosing those things that you're going to standardize across an industry as a business practice.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. That's why it has to be standardization.
Yeah.
There is also an implicit sense of standardization meaning change, because it implies that your current process does not comply to the standardization and needs to be adapted. Versus modularization is you have your process, you're splitting it into reusable parts, and that might result in standardization, or vice versa. That, again, but like as Tyler said, standardization can drive modularity as well,
and vice versa. And you can have standardization without modularity, and that's always a disaster.
Yes.
Well, But modularity also leads to, in addition to acceleration, it by osmosis creates adaptability.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all preaching to the choir here about standardization.
No, well, but what we're trying to do is frame these concepts and reframe these concepts for people, because what we're right, these are we're coming up with this inherent myth, right? With these intrinsic pieces. The dog is barking at me a lot. Sorry. That are keeping people from adopting, right? They resist the standardization process. In part because they're reading this, or a good standardization process actually moves to modularity and goes down this modularity as this beneficial build, whereas standardization tends to have the perception of being a restrictive
side. I mean, you go back to the definition of the dictionary definition of standardization as the process of making something conform to a standard. And in my mind, how I've always thought about it is that we use modularity to make standardization work effectively, right? We use modularity to eliminate the downsides of standardization.
This ends up being in part, right? Part of this is presenting the curve, but it's equally important to sit down and say, how do we present a standardization effort so that it's not falling down this left-hand track, but is presented as this is ways that we are reducing your toil, we're ultimately accelerating you. And so some of what the lesson here is that if we don't want people to perceive this big dip in agility, then they need to perceive what they're trying to get to is modularity, not standardization effort. And the challenge is a lot of standardization efforts that we see are based on risk reduction, right? That is the actual, right, that's coming down from a leadership team that is trying to improve security or spend or, right, those are their benefits, and they're not selling the modularity, reusability, toil reduction side of it as the primaries.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of the early days of iTunes and the Apple App Store, where we had essentially iTunes disrupting Napster and BitTorrent and the other, peer-to-peer networks. And the reason why that was successful when so many other efforts in creating, music sharing platforms, they failed because it was more work. Where Steve Jobs was brilliant was he was like, well, I'm going to make the experience for the users so awesome that they're going to want to pay for their music because they're getting value out of that. And that's where the folks that push strictly on standardization without thinking about utility and toil reduction, they have to go hand in hand. You can enforce standards, but you've got to use modularity to make the user experience at least equivalent and ideally much better when you move to standards.
Go ahead. I'm just drawing a mental parallel between what you just described, like the standardization happening in one direction with the music industry, or at least the music distribution industry.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year's essentially the reverse process of that and I wouldn't call this standardization. I would just call this like reduction of option or reduction of modularity on the Reddit APIs, where they removed so much functionality that they destandardized themselves just because, or demodularized themselves, but because all of the third-party systems that were integrating with it were not working anymore. And Twitter as well.
Okay, so that's the crazy problem that I have with this is standardization versus modularity. It's not a war. Because one is a means to achieve, and the other is, you know, a best practice, let's say, of standardizing across how you can get there. And what reinforces, I think, your point is if you take the verses out, it's a step towards modularity, which brings guardrails, but adds reusability, reduces risk and toil, produces some limitation, but creates innovation, acceleration, and adaptability.
Right.
I don't know if I would agree with the includes part. But they do synergize. An important part where I do agree with Joanne is that versus implies a zero sum.
You know,
that the standardization goes up, modularity goes down, or vice versa, and that's not the case.
In a sense, modularity drives standardization as a best practice.
And vice versa.
It's I'm seeing a virtuous cycle in my head.
I think the interesting thing is, I think there's a it's a presentation choice is what I was trying to say for this, is that if you're doing a standardization effort and you present it as guardrails and risk reduction versus and maybe modularity is the wrong word for this. Or maybe what we actually have here is maybe there's standardization is here and the word here is different. The word here is wrong.
Governance. I don't know.
No
standards.
I would put that as I would. Actually, Rob, I would put compliance at the top and leave standardization back where it was.
Okay.
Take versus out for a second.
How about replacing a versus with like a double-headed arrow?
Yeah, exactly.
And I would also replace reduces with causes or ensues then, because like it's not like risk reduction reduces total reduction. It's that
reduction causes total reduction. I was going to take risk and like this out.
And then, I would not do that because then you're breaking the downward flow.
Right.
Yeah, benefits.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I like that.
And then underneath acceleration, put adaptability.
Yeah, I don't know if limitation is. I would disagree with limitation, and okay. This is the reasoning for this. As I'm going down this, like. Rob, the way you seem to have done this is like guardrails adds reusability, risk reduction, benefits, total reduction. But you can also read this in the other direction. Reusability adds guardrails, total reduction, benefits, risk reduction. But I don't see the outcome of acceleration being limitations. So perhaps we can replace that with something that has a more positive shine to it.
Rules.
And this is governance.
Okay.
I don't want governance to be a bad word here.
No.
But that is.
That would make it a good word. Yeah.
Actually, it's okay. Governance.
Or perhaps put it in the next line, like contrast it with adaptability, or like it.
That's risk reduction.
Auditability, observability,
conformance.
Yeah,
conformance is a
good
one.
This is uniformity.
Yes.
Yes.
Perfect.
And I would also actually, instead of putting compliance at the top, I'd put it on the left of the standardization column and the right of the modularity column. Because right. These arguments go both ways and they're both beneficial.
And I think one of the things I want to get to is that, because ultimately the idea with the curve is to argue that this path, this standardization guardrails risk reduction, it actually crosses over, right? So this is part of the idea that these are presented as a choice, but the reality is that they're all actually, you want both benefits. That's what I like about switching this to positive. Like, this is positive. Right. This is positive. Mm-hmm. These are all positives. The thing that I'm trying to get to in the talk here, right, is that you have a perception that this process, doesn't provide that a benefit.
Right.
When it really does, because you're gonna bring in both pieces. A lot of it's just about selling, right? Selling these ideas.
And to that point, if I may, you on build, if you can, mm-hmm. you want to change your down arrows to be circular. This should be a circle background. Because you introduce them as this goes to this goes to this, but your end state is a circle. They're all good.
Right. So there's a loop.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not going to ask you to do smart art on the fly, unless you want to.
Not ready to. The other thing also is that, again, like as you move down on these rows, you can swap any individual row left and right side and still have it make sense. Right. Like standardization leads to reusability, leads to risk reduction, leads to acceleration. That is a perfectly sensible thread. So you might maybe want to add a second slide that shows that kind of variation there.
Yeah, no, I like this. This is hitting at which I like is where this goes. This is showing there's a flow between all these pieces. That's cool.
Yeah, and you could actually also, from a visual perspective and an implicit perspective, show this as a flywheel.
Oh, interesting.
Because each part of it builds value on top of the previous part.
Yeah, no, this is okay. It's much better to say it's a compliance flywheel than a compliance loop. Because that's what we're trying to get to, right? The reason why the curve has this, innovation phase in it is because of the flywheel. The flywheel is that asymptotic growth.
Yep. That's, you got it. And you have to have modularity to have that.
Do you have to have modularity, Tyler, or do you have to have some form of reusability, which is not necessarily fully modular?
That's a good point. It is, reusability is the outcome. Although in digital systems, modularity is a critical component of reuse.
I would say it depends on the context, but generally I would argue that modularity is an extension of reusability.
Yes.
You start making your components reusable, and the final result is that your architecture is modular.
Right. And my argument, my question and my comment is based on the fact that your goal, you may not end up at an end state where all the modules can be aggregated together, right? Not everything would fit together so beautifully like a puzzle. you might have an odd shaped, be modular, right? But it doesn't really fit.
It can also be reusable without being modular.
Y'all
well, are, so like a microservice.
hold on, we're out of time. I sense a semantic argument coming in, and I'm gonna break because we're at the top of the hour. This has been amazingly helpful. I still have a math. I'll put this back on the calendar a little while because I actually think there's I want to do this, but there's an intro. I think there's a math equation back here that I would love to get y'all's bright minds on. I love how you where we took this because I think it adds a lot. So thank you. Next week we're talking about AR VR and the Vision Pro.
Oh,
the underwater underwater computer.
No, the fishbowl.
The fishbowl computer.
Yeah. And by the way, go check out my digital stand-up with Isaac. It came out really, really well. It's on YouTube. Oh, interesting. Now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a link?
My 5E's framework for digital leaders.
Ooh. All right.
Yes.
Yeah, I did one that Walt that Isaac and not so great timing released right after Christmas when everybody was offline. But it was a fun conversation. I really enjoyed it. Isaac's an awesome guy.
Yeah. But it hit YouTube yesterday, and I think he'll probably say something about it on LinkedIn. I will. I already put it out on Twitter, but very fun conversation, but I have a piece that will be published either later today or first thing tomorrow, which is actually the beginning of a book chapter called The Quintessence of the 5 E's.
Oh, all right.
Where E stands for everything, not. Anyway, I will.
This looks really cool. I'm going to put here. I have the link. I'll put it in the chat. So let me stop sharing and just if people want to grab it, and then I'll put it in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
This was great. Talk to you all next week.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers.
Hello. Bye.
Wow. It's sort of fun to have a conversation that has such concrete deliverables and impacts. And this, you know, watching how a talk gets made and refined in real time, these talks, a lot of the talks I give on big concepts take, months to refine. And this type of feedback session is not one that's often recorded and broadcast. So I appreciate you listening through it to this point, and I hope you got a lot out of it. And if you give talks or you want to give talks, watching the process is part of understanding how to make your talks better. Something that's taken me many years to learn and appreciate. We do this all the time and other interesting topics too at the 2030.cloud. If you haven't yet come and seen our agenda, please check that out. We post it at the 2030.cloud, and I would love to see you there. Thank you for listening to the Cloud 2030 podcast. It is sponsored by RackN, where we are really working to build a community of people who are using and thinking about infrastructure differently, because that's what RackN does. We write software that helps put operators back in control of distributed infrastructure, really thinking about how things should be run and building software that makes that possible. If this is interesting to you, please try out the software. We would love to get your opinion and hear how you think this could transform infrastructure more broadly, or just keep enjoying the podcast and coming to the discussions and laying out your thoughts and how you see the future unfolding. All part of building a better infrastructure operations community. Thank you.